Welcome to Hype episode 150. It's Woo! A milestone. Yay! Well, a half a milestone, I guess. It's still exciting. We're out of the 40s. As me and Pam Thank talked about God. A few weeks ago, it's been Thank like God. 50 episodes in the 40s alone.
Yeah, we're so over the 40s, and 50 is the new 40 anyway, so.
Exactly. We're ready to go. This is exciting. We have all the hosts, me, Selena, Pam, and Marima. We're all here this week to celebrate Hype reaching 150 and to talk a little bit about Harry Potter, which is also celebrate, you know, I mean, our anniversary obviously comes first, but also I think Harry Potter is kind of celebrating a little bit too or whatever today. So we're going to be talking about that, and we're going to be giving you the latest entertainment news and taking your comments, talking about TV and much more. Before we get into that, as always, we want to remind you of the contact information if you want to tell us your thoughts on anything we talk about this week or suggest topics for us to talk about in the future. You can do that by emailing hype@hypeable.com. You can find us on Twitter @hypeablehype. You can find us on Instagram @hypeablehype. And you can find us on Tumblr, which is hypepodcast.tumblr.com. You can find us on Hypeable, which is hypable.com, and leave a comment in the podcast section. And you can visit our Patreon, which is patreon.com/hype. Podcast. Once again, that's patreon.com/hypepodcast. And for our Patreon subscribers, we're very proud to be able to announce that we have recorded our movie commentary for Mulan. We did that last week and it was a lot of fun, and we all kind of rediscovered the magic of that movie. And that will be going up very shortly. It might already be up by the time this comes out. So you should head on over to Patreon and listen to that while you watch the movie. It'll be fun. Okay, so let us get into how we hype, where we tell you what we've been doing in fandom this past week. Marima, why don't you go first?
Sure. Before I do that, I just wanted to quickly announce the winners for our Warlock Holmes giveaway that we were doing a few weeks ago. So over on Patreon, we are very happy to say that we had two winners, and they were Jessica Bagtas and Ashley Barnes. And then from our regular Hype listeners, Kelly Woods. And so you guys should be getting your books anytime. We have passed your info onto the publisher. Cool. Thank you so much for supporting us. And then, yeah, as for me, I've been listening to a bunch of music lately, particularly like three albums that came out kind of recently, which has meant that my Harry Styles replay has like decreased slightly, I'm embarrassed to say. But the first one was Halsey's Hopeless Fountain Kingdom, which is really cool. It's a concept album based on Romeo and Juliet. So that's been really fun. And Fleet Foxes new album Crack Up, which is their first album in 6 years. And they've gone like totally full orchestral on it. And it's super interesting and like pretty experimental, and would definitely recommend if, I mean, I guess even if you didn't like their other stuff, like it sounds like them, but it also doesn't. It definitely sounds like they've been playing around with some things in the intervening time. But of course, mostly I've been listening to Lorde's Melodrama, which is a masterpiece, and I'm obsessed with it. And I'm very grateful to Lorde for giving those of us in the Southern Hemisphere a like winter dance party album, because I feel like this time of year you often get like Song of the Summer type releases for those of you in America. But this is like very much a winter album, and it's so fantastic, and I love it all. And I'm going to see her in November. I just bought tickets, so I'm very, very excited about that. Oh, and I'm going to see Harry Styles in April.
Oh, wow.
I booked so many tickets. It costs so much money, but yes. Have you listened to this, either of you guys, to Lorde's album in particular?
I've listened to all three of these, actually.
Of course you have, Pam. I mean, yeah. Duh.
I know. Who are we talking about? I really liked Lorde's album. I was actually very pleasantly surprised that everything fit together so well, because when she was putting out all of these tracks, you know, like she was like doing a really nice job of like good fan service by teasing this album with like releasing things like Perfect Places, Greenlight, Sober, Liability. But I just couldn't like figure out how they were all going to make like one album. And then I listened to it and I was like, of course, why didn't I see it before? I will say it was really funny because before I listened to Lord's album, Jack Antonoff, who co-wrote and produced a bunch of Melodrama, he released Bleacher's second album, Under the Monk Ear, Bleacher's. And it's so funny because Jack Antonoff is one of those artists that he definitely knows his sound. And as soon as you know his sound, you recognize his footprint on anything he's ever worked on. So it is kind of funny to see his such a big influence, the big influence he had on Melodrama, and then listen to his album, which for me was just kind of so-so. And it's Jack, why can't you just write Melodrama for yourself? But I guess it's just not the kind of musician he wants to be. Anyway, that's just kind of a fun little side note. So if you really like the vibe of Melodrama and you want to hear more big band pop, synth pop, then you should check out the new Bleachers album because you'll probably really dig that.
Yeah, I have to say on Melodrama, just one more thing. I was really pleasantly surprised, like you said, both the balance of the album, because similarly to you, I was like, Lord, I love you, but how is this going to work? And it totally works. It's basically, I feel like this is a spoiler, but it's obviously not because it's an album. the album is basically tracks the aftermath of a breakup, and rather than going through this sort of cohesive arc that you get in a lot of albums, there's ups and downs, as there is in any situation like that. And I think it plays really well. But that said, you listen to something like 1989, which Jack Antonoff also was highly, highly involved in, and you can kind of hear him on every track. And I felt like on this, there were tracks where it felt like it was more Lord. I mean, it felt like it was all Lord, but there were definitely moments where you were like, oh, okay, you're just doing what you want to do. And so I felt like that was really nice too.
That's a really good point. I think that it's so funny because I was talking to somebody about Lord, before Melodrama came out, and he was saying, oh, I really like Perfect Places and it's super catchy, but it's almost it's too mainstream, you know?
Right.
It's not the Lord I want. And I was like, well, yes, but what you have to remember is that when Lord came out in 2013, she was a tastemaker and nobody was doing that kind of strips back, every note has meaning, synth pop that she kind of rose to fame on. And she's been gone for 4 years. So that's 4 years of time that other artists like Halsey, who I feel is very similar to Lord, have had a chance to kind of use her similar technique to kind of gain traction in the top 40 or the hot 100 and stuff like that. So what Lord was doing before is not necessarily fully original to somebody that doesn't really stop to think about it. But I think that she's still definitely leading the pack, because then you hear something like Perfect Places, which is I'll just use that as an example because it's a radio single now. And you can hear a lot of the influences from Pure Heroine on there, specifically with tracks like Royals in there. And so it's kind of nice to see a little more of a polished version on certain tracks, and but also kind of cool that she's not afraid to do something different. So
yeah, totally. I have to tell you guys, on Halsey, I read a review which was hilarious. So the whole album is based on Romeo and Juliet. It's a very concept album. And she opens by reading the prologue of the play. And I saw a review that was the album is good, but the prologue is a bit heavy-handed. I don't know if we need it. Obviously, as if she had written it. And it's
oh my God,
it's
no.
From, it was the prologue was really kind of lame and sort of kitsch and whatever, and it's it's Shakespeare, guys, calm down. Mm-hmm. It was the most ridiculous thing.
My whole problem with that is that she read it with such a monotone voice.
Yeah, it was a bit weird.
No inflection. Yeah, so I wouldn't have I don't mind that it's there, but I do think that it was kind of funny that she was very monotone when she read it. Honestly, I really like that album, but I think I need to spend more time with it because right now I'm not into the first half, and I start with Liar and work my way down. that's my jam.
Yeah,
I feel like, do you feel the same way or I don't know.
Yeah, I also kind of skipped over it a little bit because it came out and then Crack Up came out and then Melodrama came out, and I was like, all right, bye Halsey. So I need to go back and spend some time.
Yeah. Have we bored you, Selena, yet?
Nope.
Music hype is over.
Let's move on to some other news now. We've got a bunch of stuff to get into. Pam, it's you first.
It is. Let me just swallow my ice.
Oof. For this icy piece of news?
Oh, yeah. For this icy piece of news.
Someone's getting stuck in... there's some kind of ice joke.
Oh, yeah. Some that I'm not...
Someone's being frozen out.
Yeah. Yes. So yay. Oh my God. There is so much drama going down with the upcoming Han Solo anthology, you guys. First of all, the directors for the film decided to, well, apparently they were fired, allegedly. Like, there's been so much going on with this movie. So originally when the story was reported, all we heard was that Phil Lord and Christopher Miller were parting ways with Lucasfilms. And it was kind of, like, really shocking for the fan base and just kind of for anybody that follows entertainment news, because they're literally, like, 3 weeks away from finishing up. So it's kind of really weird that the directors are suddenly, like, parting ways because of irreconcilable differences. And it's like, didn't you guys realize this, like, mm-hmm. before you started filming? Like, and then, like, it's just, man, I don't know. So after we got that news, we found out a few days later, or, like, well, rumors started swirling very shortly after the directors had left, that Ron Howard was in talks to take over. And now we have confirmation that he's set to take over and do any pickups and stuff like that necessary. So everybody's kind of wondering who's going to get credited for this film, because Lucasfilm could argue that even though Ron Howard stepped in at the last minute, he set the tone for, like, the movie as a whole. But at the same time, Lord and Miller have obviously done so much work on the project that it kind of, you know, it seems impossible to kind of, like, the outsider looking in, that they shouldn't get credit at all. But that all ultimately ends up being decided, I believe, by the Directors Guild. So it's going to be interesting what they think, like, what they ruminate over in terms of, like, deciding who actually gets final credit, or if, like, all three of them are going to get credit, or if just Howard is going to get credit, or, like, what's going to go down here. Do you guys have any comments on that before we get, like, into the last bit of news? Because I feel like there's so much to unpack here. Like, that's the thing.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, obviously there's a lot to sort of speculate about. I'm going to be honest, I care very little about this movie, to be honest. Like, the more news comes out, it's kind of like a Spider-Man situation for me. I'm just like, eh, whatever. But I do think it's interesting, like, it, in terms of, like, just film authorship in these cinematic universes, I think it's so fascinating. And I think they're sort of pushing the bar more and more in terms of who actually has creative control. If it is, like, in Marvel, if it is Kevin Feige or the individual directors, and in this case, if it's Kathleen Kennedy or if it's the director, because I remember when Edgar Wright departed Ant-Man, and obviously that was, like, much earlier in the process, but there was all this talk about, well, Edgar Wright was developing an Ant-Man that was supposed to be his own. Like, he was putting his own mark on it. And then Marvel was like, you know what? It no longer fits into what we're imagining for the cinematic universe as a whole. So they brought in a director that had, like, a TV background that they were, like, more able to sort of mold. And, like, I know that, like, the Lego movie directors don't have the same cred as Edgar Wright necessarily, but it's just so interesting that they can go in, like, not only remove them from the project, like, before they start filming, but actually when they're, like, almost done with filming, and just be like, actually, we don't like what you're doing, so we're going to bring in someone else, and someone else with a completely different take and vision and storytelling model. And it just, it really, these cinematic universes is just, like, changing the power structure of film. I think it's so fascinating.
Yeah, that's like, I mean, that's a really good point, because, and it's so funny that they pulled such a big name in Ron Howard to kind of go into this situation, because you would think a bigger director would want more creative control. So it's kind of interesting to think that, like, his idea of what is coming up next, it aligns better with Lucasfilm's ideas, you know.
He's basically, like, you know, on a script, when they pull in these, like, punch uppers or whatever it's called to, like, fix a script at the last minute, like, that's basically what he's been brought in to do as a director.
Right. And it should be noted too that it's kind of like, oh, Ron Howard directing, like, a Star Wars movie. Apparently he was the first choice to direct Phantom Menace, which I thought was really interesting. Oh. Yeah. Oh, so they've been eyeing him for a while. Take of that what you will.
Nervous laughter.
Yeah. No.
What
do you think?
I mean, I basically just agree with everything Selena said. Like, I also don't really care about this movie, so it's hard to be, like, super invested in the specifics of this. But I think it does set a sort of interesting precedent. And, like you outlined very articulately, so there's no point in me repeating it, it does kind of give a glimpse into, like, what these broader dynamics are now and how this whole system is changing a lot. Ron Howard just seems like a weird choice to me. But I mean, fine, I guess, whatever. Yeah, it's always interesting because I feel like the end product of this is always a film that people are like, who did what bits, like analyzing it forever. Like, that's exactly what happened with Ant-Man. And people are like, oh, this was obviously a hangover from Edgar Wright. And like, this was the new guy. It's like just such, I don't know, navel gazing.
Well, the last bit of drama surrounding the upcoming Han Solo movie, this kind of sounds a lot worse than it is. But like in the grand scheme of things, it does kind of make sense. So after all of this director stuff went down, reports started swirling that Lucasfilm was not satisfied with Alden Ehrenreich's performance as Han Solo, which
they're gonna recast him.
Cause for worry. I know, could you imagine? So this report
they're getting
came
Miles
out.
Teller for the last couple of scenes.
I mean, wasn't he basically cast because he looked like Harrison Ford? Like, why are we surprised that they don't think he's any good?
Well, honestly, what's that movie, Hail Caesar? Like, he basically plays like an actual cowboy in that. So I feel like they were like, oh, he kind of looks like Harrison Ford. He already played a cowboy. It's fine. But I mean, like, that is a stretch. Of course, there's like so many more layers to the character of Han. So that's kind of a moot point. But this story actually came from the Hollywood Reporter, who found out from a source close to the production that Lucasfilm was not satisfied and then decided to hire an acting coach for Ehrenreich. And the reason they did this is because they didn't like the version of Han that Phil Lord and Chris Miller, who were the former directors, were kind of like pushing him in the direction of like bringing out on screen. So now that they've got a new director, they're like, well, you know, we're going to change this up and you need, but like, again, like this doesn't make
it's
sense
so
because
it's so weird. I really like want to see this
there's
movie.
There's three
now.
More weeks and like, you can't have two different Han Solos, you know, you kind of just have to go with the one, right? Or are they just going to remake the whole movie? How much money would that take?
Well, you can do a lot in the editing room.
That's so funny. True.
Maybe there'll be
CGI
a lot of like
a new performance.
Yeah, or a lot of off-screen Han like talking to other people who you do see. A lot of like, oh, he just stepped out to take a phone call. Anyway,
yeah, a lot of jump cuts in front of him like, the whole time.
Yes,
it's gonna be jump cuts.
Yes,
oh, be amazing.
Oh no.
All right. Well, I feel like we've exhausted the hilarity of Lucasfilm and Disney. So let's jump over to DC. Bad news, I guess, for both Joss Whedon fans and Batgirl fans this week. So for a little bit of backstory, as we know, Joss Whedon was attached to Wonder Woman about 10 years ago now. He was writing the script, I think in 2005 he was hired. He left the project in 2007, citing creative differences. The script actually leaked online about a month ago, but it was sort of picked up by the internet in the past couple weeks when one particular fan on Twitter sort of went through it like line by line and basically made us all aware that it was really, really terrible and completely ridiculous and not at all about Diana and basically all about Steve and having all seen and celebrated Patty Jenkins' vision of Wonder Woman. You know, people are probably particularly critical of it in this particular moment. But now, of course, people are concerned because Joss Whedon is becoming much more involved with the DC Extended Universe. He's taken over post-production on Justice League after Zack Snyder had to step away. But also he is set to direct, write, and produce, I guess write being the key word here, the Batgirl film for DC. We don't really have any more details about that, but most of this Wonder Woman drama has been sort of cast through that lens of not like, let's compare the two. And actually, Patty Jenkins just gave an interview where she said, I don't think there's any reason to compare the two. And it is what it was. I'm lucky that I'm the person who got to do it, but I don't see what would be beneficial about comparing what he would have done versus what I would have done. There's been certainly some element of that, but mostly people are looking at this and thinking, especially because Joss Whedon is like on record defending this script as I think as late as last year. So this wasn't a thing where he said, oh, I wrote the script and yeah, I don't think it would have worked now. But anyway, like it was fun at the time. Is the thing where he seems to kind of stand by this, to have him now involved in the production and creation of Batgirl some people were already had concerns about this, myself included, and now this doesn't bode well. So have you guys been following this whole controversy? It's been kind of fascinating.
I'm not worried, to be honest. I think that the script was written 10 years ago. I think that I liked Avengers. I liked Age of Ultron a lot more than certain other people did. I think that...
Me.
Not you, but like people in general seem to do. I think when we talked about Wonder Woman in our bonus Patreon segment too, I think because one of the valid complaints about Whedon's script was that it was so focused on Steve Trevor. And I think I even pointed out that one issue that I had with the actual Wonder Woman film was how focused it was on Steve Trevor. So I mean, obviously Joss Whedon's script is much worse because it is much more from his point of view. But I think that in general, that criticism is one that I might be inclined to apply to Patty Jenkins' Wonder Woman 2. I wouldn't do that necessarily because I don't think we need to criticize it because it's just awesome and it shouldn't be held up to like too much scrutiny, I don't think necessarily, but I mean, we'll see. I understand, I can see. I mean, I read the script, I thought it was pretty crap, but it honestly doesn't have me too worried.
Interesting. Well, I feel like this is the line that we usually come down of you being like, and me being like, nope.
Yeah, I mean, there's stuff that he's done that I think is amazing, and then there's stuff that he's done where I'm like, not so amazing, and this is definitely one of those times.
Yeah.
But I'm also still like, 10 years is a long time.
Sure.
Like, it's hard for me to judge a Batgirl by this script, you know, which is like, we don't even know what it would have ended up looked like if it had made it to screen, so.
No, but I think we can judge based on what we saw in Avengers and in Age of Ultron, both of which...
Yeah, which I didn't mind.
I know you didn't mind, but I had like major, major issues with the portrayal of the women in that. And so this just seems like, look, as we've discussed, and we don't have to have this argument again, because I feel like we have it every time Joss Whedon comes up, like Buffy was amazing. And particularly for the time when it was made, it was and still remains incredibly groundbreaking. But like for me, I kind of feel like Joss Whedon is stuck in 2004 and hasn't progressed past that. And all of the female characters that we have seen really seem to be kind of in that mold, and so that is concerning to me. But like you said, we don't know till we know. Pam, you want to be a tiebreaker on this?
Definitely. I was just gonna say quickly, sorry, Batgirl is definitely going to be a test, and I think that I will just say, like, as a final thing, that I still wish that it was a woman directing and writing Batgirl. Like, beyond, like, Whedon, I think it should be a woman.
Yeah.
I'm just still, you know, kind of like, meh.
Sure.
We'll see. Sorry, go on, Pam.
Well, I feel like you kind of capped that off pretty well. So there's not much more I can say, except for the fact that Joss has been made very aware of the problems that people had with Avengers, Age of Ultron.
What, you don't think that everyone was starring his name like he was the
devil?
Didn't
he like quit Twitter or something after that? So I feel like, honestly, like this is, like Selena was saying, this is going to be the ultimate test. Like, ideally, he's learned his lesson.
He loved the new Wonder Woman. So there's that.
Yeah, I guess we'll see. I guess we'll see what happens. But I understand why you have little faith, Marima. It makes sense.
Pam.
Marima.
You're like such a fence sitter.
I'm a fence sitter. Well, somebody has to be the fence sitter.
That's true.
No, I mean, honestly, like, I think I'm the original poster child for the, you know, we'll see when it happens. So I'm still on brand.
Yeah, totally. But, I mean, I think the good thing is, like, it has really generated a conversation, this whole thing. And it's been good to see people going in really deep about this, about like the different aspects of the script, and saying it's not just the fact that like it focuses on Steve, but like the particular use of language and all these kinds of things.
The description of women compared to men and all of that.
This is
really
like
important that people are
and it's also something that like often we talk about, like, I guess the end product, and not, we don't get to see the script and all of those things that go into it. So that has been super interesting, like regardless of the author of it.
Right.
Yeah. And you always see like that. You go back. Do you remember like every time like there's some really good movie comes out and every once in a while they'll be like, this is what the script looked like in the early stages. Yeah. Be, like complete rubbish. Right. Like that's also kind of like you can't excuse the sexist language and stuff that he uses. But for most of it, I'm just like, yeah, but most scripts are crap right. when, you know, you
well,
read them in that
that's
form,
what I mean. So. But I don't think people are judging this based on like old the way it's plotted out is not very good. I think it's like the language he uses to describe women is like really abhorrent in places and very concerning that like at any point he felt like that was okay to put on paper. So yeah, as far as the like, you know, sort of development things of the story and everything, I completely agree, of course.
Shall we move on to some more movie news?
Sure.
All right. So Pitch Perfect 3 is coming out this December, and we got a little, like, I use teaser trailer very loosely here. This is allegedly the first teaser trailer for Pitch Perfect 3, but it's more like a really fun behind the scenes, like, here are the memories that we've made while we were filming Pitch Perfect 3. So it does give us our first look at the Barden Bellas, but it's not really much to go on as far as, like, this is the storyline of the film. In the teaser, which is up on Hypeable.com if you haven't seen it yet, aside from the highlights, the director does mention that in the movie we'll be seeing the Bellas go on a global tour. So it kind of sounds like they're on another adventure. And yeah, I mean, like, I think these movies are really fun. I think this is the last one they're going to make, which is good because you don't want too much of a good thing. You know, you don't want to beat people over the head with it. But yeah, it should be a good time of the movies. I'll be going to see this. It looks really cute.
I still have to see the second one.
It's cute. They're not. Yeah. They didn't bring back the like the treble tones or anything like that for this one, which was like big controversy in the Pitch Perfect fandom.
Is this the trailer? Sorry, I'm confused now. If this is a different thing to what I saw, like because this I haven't seen anything that has like behind the scenes stuff, but wasn't there an actual trailer that was released with like them going to like enter, like they're all in sort of dead end jobs and they're entering a new competition? Like, have I been tricked by a fan trailer? Shit. Like, what did I watch?
Hold on, if there has been, I'm so completely confused. Missed that and I'm very bad at my job.
I think there might have been a new one out today or something.
Cool.
It's really bad. the trailer.
It looks
so ridiculous. It looks really, really bad. It's you know how we were all kind of speculating that, oh, they'll sort of go back and teach at the university or something now they've graduated. It's just like everyone's in a really dead end job and they decide like, let's reform, let's get the band back together. And then they enter a competition where they have to verse people who actually play instruments, like they're in an actual band competition this time rather than against other a cappella groups. And I think Ruby Rose is like the villain or something. And it is really, really silly. It like not in the way that the other two were. It looks really bad. Like it looks like a bad movie. It's certainly a bad trailer.
That's like so depressing though, because they're all just like, I don't want to watch movies where people are like not living happy lives, you know?
Right.
I have enough existential crises for like myself.
Not enough of that from you.
Yeah. So true.
That's true.
Yeah. When I watched it, I was like, this is not good. What is happening? Of course, it's hard to judge from the first trailer, but like I saw everyone being like, this looks amazing. And I was like, we watch different things then because this does not look good at all.
Oh, well, I guess one thing you won't be looking at ahead of where I was going with the transition. here's a story that like frustrates me on so many levels and worries me because it sets a bit of a dangerous precedent. I think, maybe I'm wrong, HBO has announced that they will not be releasing screeners for Game of Thrones season 7, which is like, it doesn't like necessarily directly concern us because I don't think any of us would be able to watch them even if they did. But their argument is, of course, because Game of Thrones is really secretive and they literally like they just basically they don't trust the press with screeners because they don't want secrets to leak. Now, you know, like this makes sense because obviously you don't want, like, the Game of Thrones is now moving beyond the books, so, like, you really don't want to know what happens next, and I understand that there are unfortunately, issues with handing out screeners. For The 100 in season 4, we had a lot of issues with screener details being leaked, and the finale was leaked like before anything had even started airing because of the script pages, and then like people were watching week to week and like giving like shipper details and stuff. So like I totally understand that screeners are like can be a problem. The problem with this news is that no, you know, don't go searching for it or anything, but the entire synopsis for Game of Thrones season 7 is already on the internet. So literally all that this does is just prevent press from... Yeah, it is.
I'm Googling it right now.
You can go
find it. Well, you know Merma loves spoilers.
Don't tell us.
Yeah. I live for spoilers.
Yeah, well, that's fine, but I don't want to know anything. But like it's just completely ridiculous because it's basically... This is just a big F you to the press who won't be able to prepare recaps, and they won't be able to like do anything fun with it. And like, I understand in this case that HBO literally doesn't need, like, Game of Thrones sells itself. So it really only is a courtesy to give press screeners, but it just rubs me the wrong way. I'm just like, this is just so dumb because like people can find the spoilers if they really want.
Do you know what rubs me the wrong way?
No, what?
That I feel like they say this, but you know that they're going to give screeners to selected members anyway. Right. And I know this for a fact because I worked at a publication that like has gotten exuberant amounts of access. Mm-hmm. And I, at the time, transcribed interviews for like finale episodes of Game of Thrones because they get to see the whole scene. So it's just like, this is what bothers me because it creates a hierarchy amongst our kind, which is already like there, but you don't need to like drive the nail in the coffin. And I'm sure it happens for other series too. So that's what really bugs me the most about this, that they say, oh, nobody's getting anything, but like some people get the things and you can tell who gets the things.
Yeah. I was just going to say, like, I completely understand everything you just said, but like this, there is already a precedent. Like this already happens with books, with big releases. They don't send them out for review. Because they're worried about things leaking and, you know, et cetera. So I guess I'm not surprised. I'm kind of surprised it's taken this long to reach TV, especially because, like, it's so easy to, you know... I mean, it's not just people leaking things early, right? It's, like, actual episodes getting out. And Game of Thrones has had that problem before with, like, whole episodes leaking early. So I understand this sort of hesitancy. It's also super frustrating from, like, a journalism point of view because you can't, like do your job.
I understand it. Right. And we were saying this for The 100, too, that I was saying at one point, I was just like, if they're so worried about screeners, then spoilers, just stop releasing screeners. Like, if we're all on the same page, who cares? But, like, for something like this, it's, like, doubly frustrating because, first of all, the spoilers are out there and it wasn't the journalists who are trying to do their jobs who leaked them. So, like, why are they being, you know, why are they not allowed to, like, do their jobs since the spoilers are already out there? But it's also just it frustrates me because you're totally right, like in theory TV could, the big series could exist completely without screeners, but spoilers are going to get out anyway, and screeners are such an important part of like what we do, like on Hypebeable or Entertainment Weekly or like wherever else you work as a journalist. So for me, I'm just like, I don't want it to spread to TV. I don't want this to like become the norm, you know.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Annoying. But yeah, it's just like a job thing, I guess. But.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if it was actually keeping the secrets, then I would be like, great, because like people who leak screeners are dumb, but like it's not. So why?
Yeah, I was about to say, like, it's really like keep the secrets when people like looked up the spoilers and then were mad that there were spoilers. Like, don't look them up. It's you know.
I think the thing is, too, is, like, you kind of have to think about who is actually leaking these episodes, because there's no, I don't think that unless, like, they're copy marking everything, which they do these days for digital screeners, like, if you're handing out hard copies, which some networks still do, there's no way for you to know if it's, like, somebody in the studio end, somebody, like, in the press end, somebody that's an assistant.
Yeah, and it's usually just description, so it could be anyone.
So it's just, like, really weird to me that, you know, that, like, that the few get punished for the many get punished for the actions of a few. It's too bad, for sure.
True that. All right, moving on to the real tragedy of this week, though. Oh, no, I skipped someone's story.
Yeah, it's my story. I thought you were going to take my story and I was going to say, yeah, not. Go for it. Because I, pop culture.
No, what I did was take off my glasses for a second. So I can no longer read the rundown.
I am, I'm not like the biggest Downton Abbey fan in the world. I know, shocker. I feel like I should be. Maybe I should give this series a second try.
I was sure you were.
Let
you
me take this me story.
A Downton Abbey fan. Because you want to talk about this? Switch go for
yes,
it.
I'll tell you okay. why. Because I have not seen Downton Abbey, except I just watched Maggie the series Smith. Finale with my mom. Oh. Because she binged so the whole thing in like 3 weeks.
Tell us about
visiting.
Downton Abbey.
Wow. Okay, Downton Abbey is a fascinating class sort of soap drama that I don't know the names of anyone, but they're great, and Maggie Smith is in it, and it finished after 6 seasons, I believe, and they announced recently that they were hoping to do a movie, and now it's confirmed. And an NBC...
6 seasons and a movie!
Yes, exactly like Community. An NBC executive has confirmed that it's in development and could film next year. So who knows what is going to happen? They kind of tied things up. I'm trying to remember. We did watch the finale. They do kind of tie things up in the finale, but I guess like someone will get hit by a car or like, I don't know, something will happen and they'll have to like redo the whole thing. Maybe this will be the retcon. I do remember that there was like a lot of shipping of Mary and the hot chauffeur, whose name I can't remember, but my mom was very like a big fan of him because he's like a communist on the side or whatever, and she thought that was fun. Also would like to reveal that my mom is Team Edith, just in case anyone is concerned. I was Team Mary, so there was a division. But anyway, as far as details of the movie, that's kind of it. Julian Fellowes, who created Downton Abbey, has already said like he was very interested in doing the movie, and yeah, I guess it's going to film next year and we'll see what happens. But neither of you guys have watched this, or you don't watch Downton?
I did.
Oh.
I watched it until Matthew died, and then I was like, no, and then I stopped. And then I later heard that, should we be giving all the spoilers? I don't know. But
that was a big deal, though.
My other favorite character died. And yeah, mm-hmm. And then I was like, I have no reason to watch because both of my faves
your fave. Yeah. I know who you're talking about.
I watched the first season, and like there was that really awkward moment where Theo James like
dies
after
episode.
He has sex. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, Mary.
Yeah. They have to like drag his corpse away.
He has
away
sex with Mary
through.
And then he like can no longer continue living.
I didn't know that was him. That's hilarious.
They have to drag his corpse out of the house. It's like this is my one memory.
That's the moment when you're like, oh, I understand everything that this show is about. Yeah, it's a really silly show, but I mean the whole thing about it, right, is like it's this whole thing where you're meant to be like, oh, they're so nice to these people who are basically their slaves. Like it's like they even let them like stay around the house area, and like, you know, at the end, the way that they kind of send them off is the, you know, master or whatever, played by Hugh Bonneville, he like shakes their hands, which obviously is very modern, and they all get really emotional about it, and it's so silly. So I had a lot of fun because I didn't know who anyone was, so I kept asking my mom, and she was like, you can't just come in at the last minute and ask all these questions. And I was like, what did you think was going to happen when we watched this together, this show that I haven't seen? So anyway, that's happening, and if no one has any more thoughts, I will move on to the actual tragedy. Unless Pam, do you want to take this one? Because we could do a switch.
It's up to you. Do you really want to talk about this, or do you want me to set it up and you can just come in and be upset?
Yeah, let's do it.
Understandably.
Let's
okay.
do it.
Because I'm really, like, fired up about this, too. You guys...
Well, you wrote the story.
The chorus.
Look, we have been lied to, and Freeform thought they were going to get away with this, but no. So last year, Freeform just, like, gave us everything we've always wanted and announced that they were going to greenlight a Greek revival, and it was going to be like this made for TV movie and all of our favorites from Cypress Roads were going to come back, and the premise was going to be that everybody was back in town at the university for the 5-year reunion. We're going to see what everybody was up to, and you know, it was going to be like basically magic. And like they had like the original showrunner, Sean Smith, who was like locked in to write the screenplay and all of this stuff. And he was going to get the cast back, and it was all going to be great. And we just like kind of quietly forgot about it because we assumed it was on the back burner. We were going to get it soon. And then late last week, we found out via a report from TV Line that Freeform had quietly pulled the plug on the Greek revival. But the best part about this, though, is that TV Line contacted Freeform, which at the time that we wrote this story up had not commented back on the situation. They also contacted series creator Sean Smith, who then wrote back and told them that he learned about the cancellation via TV Line and had no idea this was happening. And the last he knew, they were going to push it back because they didn't have the funds to greenlight it for this coming TV season. But he thought it was all a go. He had, you know, completed a first draft of the script, sent it over, and he says he has no idea why Freeform has decided not to go through with this.
God.
And that's where we are. We're all just as confused as he is.
Freeform is dead to us, guys. Like, we have had to sit through ridiculous revivals and sequels for literally everything, and the only one that we actually wanted, they're not gonna make. I'm so bitter about this.
It was our time now.
It was our time. I'm so sad about this. Like, genuinely, I really love this show. And this was, like, the kind of perfect thing, because they could do, like, you know, a made-for-TV movie is, like, very much in the style of this, and a reunion would be perfect. Like, we could just see what everyone was doing, and, you know, it wouldn't be, like, they weren't promising to do a whole new series or anything else like that. It was just going to be the one thing, and it was going to be great, and we were, like, all so into it. And then Freeform has crushed our hopes and dreams, so I hope they never have anything good in this life ever again. And maybe, will Netflix pick this up or something? I mean, there's a script. Can't someone else make this? Like,
this is what I'm saying. But I have, like, no faith
in... They could do a Veronica Mars on it.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Because, honestly, I used to put a lot of hope in Netflix. I have no hope in Netflix anymore. Honestly.
Yeah, true that.
Like, especially this last, like, TV season. Like, Netflix has also crushed all of my hopes and dreams.
Hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's true.
Yeah.
They aren't the saviors of TV that we thought they were.
They're becoming much more of just like a kind of standard network, right? So like it's just that they're acting the way that all other networks act by canceling all the shows that we like and some we don't like, as we'll get to in a minute. Mm-hmm. but yeah, I think you're right. Like less faith in Netflix. But like how much is this going to cost? Like I have at least $20 in my bank account. Can I kickstart this movie?
Yeah. I mean, like, are there enough Greek fans?
There aren't big stars in this.
But do the actors, that's the question, is how much the actors want it? Because for Veronica Mars, I know that they really, like, Kristen Bell was, like, championing this along with Rob Thomas, you know?
What
are they doing? The Evan guy, he's been in, like, failed pilot after failed pilot.
Yeah, you know. Limitless is sadly gone. That was a really good show.
Oh, yeah. Limitless was fun. The only one who, like, I feel like Dale is the one who's done the most, but he was already in a lot of things, even when Greek was
on.
That's
true. That's very true.
Yeah. He's kind of the type.
Yep.
Yeah. Oh, well. Anyway, moving on to some better news. This is really exciting. This has been, like, at least 6 years in the works. The CW announced earlier this week that the long-anticipated or demanded spin-off of Supernatural, Wayward Daughters was the title, now it's Wayward Sisters, has been greenlit for a backdoor pilot in Supernatural season 13. So it only takes the male-led show 13 seasons before we get a possible female-led spin-off, whatever. There's kind of been a side story running within Supernatural. Supernatural is obviously about these two brothers that are saving people, hunting things, family business, monsters, demons, and but there's been a bunch of side characters that are sort of recurring over the course of the series, and one of them is Sheriff Jody Mills, who I believe was introduced in season 4 or 3 or something like that, and she's been played by Kim Rhodes, and she's sort of been in and out of the show ever since. And she's been sort of like taking on a few orphans, and she's teaming up with another Brianna Buckmaster, as Sheriff Donna, who's also become recurring and sort of become fan favorites. And now, like, it's just a backdoor pilot, so it's just like an episode in Supernatural season 13, and it's probably like a way of potentially continuing the show. And I have to admit that I'm like, even though I know that this is fan demand, and I know obviously fans in the Supernatural community, they're mostly female and they are interested in seeing more female-led shows, but I'm wondering how this is actually going to fare without the Winchesters' involvement, because I, you know, obviously the Winchesters are the core draw of this fandom. But I do love that it's happening. I follow Kim Rhodes on Twitter, and her enthusiasm for this fandom and for the Wayward Daughters sort of faction of fans has been incredibly inspiring, and I really hope that this leads to something. I mean. We all remember the Gossip Girl backdoor pilot, I'm sure, that was going to feature
truly the best Serena episode.
Vander Woodson Sr. Yeah, with No Doubt.
Oh my God, it was playing amazing. A musical cameo.
We will never forget, and that never led anywhere. So this is by no means a guarantee, but I think it's exciting. I think it's potentially a good thing, and it would be like basically a woman version of Supernatural, you know? I mean, they would be a little bit more stationary, but it would basically be like a bunch of women fighting demons, and I'm here for it.
I just don't understand, like, how are they gonna have a show and also kill all the female characters every episode? Like,
yeah, that's gonna be a challenge for them.
Also, every time you say Wayward Sisters, in my head I just hear Windward Circle.
Me
and like
too.
Have Jess flashbacks. I was like, the original backdoor pilot.
Yeah, hadn't even thought about that. So funny.
You're a bad Jess fan.
But yeah, no, I mean yeah, Supernatural, it's doing it's not doing great, but it's doing kind of okay sometimes. And at least they haven't killed these women, you know?
Yay.
So there's that.
I mean, I don't watch the show, so I have nothing to contribute except like snarky comments. But yay, I'm glad you're excited. And
I am excited.
And I'm sure Supernatural fans will also be excited. Something else, we were just speaking of Netflix as we were earlier. We found out that in addition to Sense8 and The Get Down, Netflix has also axed Girl Boss, the show that was terrible. So I don't really care, but I know some people liked it inexplicably. So yep, it got 13 episode first season, and that's it. So sorry to anyone who was a fan and who was waiting for season 2, but that happened.
When I saw this headline, I thought of you immediately and thought about how chuffed you might have felt when you saw this too.
I was like, lol. I also saw there was a quote from the woman, Sophia, I can't remember her surname, who like the show is based on. And she wrote a thing being like, it's hard seeing yourself as a caricature, like I'm not a dick or whatever. And I was like, I mean, didn't you fire women for like being pregnant? So maybe you are. Like, I have very little sympathy for you.
Honestly, like, but it made me feel a little bit better, like when the show got canceled too, because I begrudgingly finished the first season and I kind of hate myself for it because it didn't really get better.
Oh, no.
But I really liked that when this news came out, like I was like looking through reactions and a lot of people kind of felt the same way. Like there were some people that were like, oh, this show is like for them, like super feminist because it's like this imperfect character and she's allowed to make mistakes and blah, 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 this and that. And then there were a lot of people like us that were just like, we're tired of the BS because it's not cute. And she, like the manic pixie dream girl who just like never changes, is repetitive and boring and, you know, harder and harder to root for this day and age. So yeah, I thought for some reason that maybe we did not have our thumb on the pulse of pop culture anymore. But I thought it was really interesting. I know. I did think it was really interesting that there was like, there were a lot of divided feelings over this. So
yeah, totally. I think as far as like cancellations like Sense8 goes, this is hardly like the worst news out of Netflix this season. So.
Good point.
Totally. Well, here's something interesting. It's my turn.
Oh, no, it is your turn.
My story. I don't know. Sorry, Pam.
150 episodes. We can't do it anymore. Yeah.
Well, here's something interesting that's bound to make you feel some type of way. Whether that's good or bad is up to you. Mark Gatiss and Stephen Moffat are teaming up again. Sherlock might be, you know, no more, but they're already working on their next project, and it looks like they're going to be bringing Dracula to life in a similar format. Variety was the first to report this news, and there's no timeline for the project, and so the series is very far away from being cast or setting a premiere date or anything like that, but it is something that's in the works, so make of that what you will. Should be a good time, I guess.
Yeah, it's going to be super interesting to see how they manage to make Dracula racist and sexist. So, can't wait for that. Literally, why does anyone let Stephen Moffat make anything?
Wayward vampire.
I hate him so much.
Yeah, they're going to... Who is the Dracula must have some kind of sidekick that they're going to have sexy romantic tension with that they're never going to act on?
I don't know. I've never read Bram Stoker's actual Dracula, so...
Hopefully it's not a guy, because if so, hashtag no homo. Like, we could never do that.
Right.
That's what I was thinking. They're going to do that.
Get with the
times,
guys.
That's an audible eye roll. Because you guys can't see my reaction.
All the homo these days, honestly. Like, just.
I mean.
That sounded really weird. But you know what I mean. Like, it's like, honestly, like, this is. It's so backwards now to basically queer bait. It's getting ridiculous.
Yeah, you would think so. And look at the people who get to make TV shows.
I know.
Yep, this is bad news. I mean, I don't care about Dracula, but I don't want Stephen Moffat on anyone's TV, so bye.
Yeah. So speaking of queerbaiting, I don't know how to make this transition, but Supergirl is going to make an interesting change for its third season. It moved to CW for its second season, and it overwent a little bit of an overhaul that I think in retrospect, at least in my opinion, was a little bit of a fail. I think we were all expecting great things from Supergirl in season two, and I haven't seen the whole season. I've seen like patches of it here and there. They basically started the season by like undoing the James Kara like building love story that had been so great, and then they were like, no, we're gonna give her like this boring ass white guy, no storyline, like screen suck character who basically has like ruined Kara's character. I'm sorry, I'm really bitter about this. I think pretty ridiculous. She's like a love interest now, and she only cares about her love interest, this guy, and it's really dumb. But anyway, sorry, off track. For the third season, they're going to be switching it up, and they have promoted Jessica Queller and Robert Rauner to co-showrunner positions for Supergirl Season 3. So they'll be working alongside Andrew Kreisberg, which is interesting because, I mean, this is something we didn't talk about on Hype before, but about a month ago, it was announced that Ali Adler would be departing as showrunner. She was the creator of the show, and there has been a little bit of, like, undercurrent speculation that once the show moved from CBS to the CW, Ali Adler, even though she stayed on, she wasn't like actually as in charge as she had been in the first season, which I think kind of, you know, like Kreisberg kind of took over, and the suddenly male-led show went through some changes, and we can all speculate about that. But now there's going to be like basically a three-person showrunning situation for the third season. And of interest to you guys, Jessica Queller has worked on shows including Gilmore Girls, Gossip Girl, Blood and Oil, and the other guy has worked on Crossing Jordan, Private Practice, and Dallas. In my opinion, it really can't get worse. This wasn't their fault, Supergirl's fault, but they have this really great love story between Maggie and Alex, and the actress who plays Maggie is actually not going to be a regular next season. She's only going to be recurring. So we're going to have to figure out what we do there. Lena Luthor is a fan favorite, played by Katie McGraw. And she'll be back. She'll be a series regular
for Merlin.
So who knows what's going to happen with that? Yeah.
Oh, yay!
From Merlin, she's on Supergirl now.
That's, didn't great. You know that's the only reason this is our favorite show that we haven't finished yet?
Yeah. This is why I so desperately want to like it.
Yeah, makes sense.
But I just
look.
Can't.
We know what we like. This is okay.
Yeah, it's Katie McGraw. But no, I mean, this is such a mess. Like, this poor
show.
Such
a shame.
Like, I want it to be good, and it's just, it's just not been a good season.
It was good for a while, though, right? Because I fell totally behind in the first season, but yeah, that's so sad.
I mean, it wasn't, the thing about the first season is that it wasn't, like, really that gripping, but it was really sort of empowering.
Mm-hmm.
And the second season, they just kind of went in a totally different direction, and like the story might be better. I don't even know, but it's definitely not as empowering anymore.
Yeah.
So that's a shame.
That is a shame.
Yeah, but now at least 1/3 will be a woman.
Yay.
Showrunner. So that's a
and I'm sure she'll be getting paid 1/3 of what the men are. All right, moving on. Why am I so negative today? What am I mean today? All right, finishing up with some book news now. It's a very exciting news for John Green fans. It's been 5 years, but never fear. His new book is on the way. It's going to be called Turtles All the Way Down, and it will be released on October 10th this year. So, like, only in a few months.
This title.
That's so soon. They've released a synopsis which reads, Turtles All the Way Down begins with a fugitive billionaire and a cash reward. It is about lifelong friendship, the intimacy of an unexpected reunion, Star Wars fan fiction, and Tuatara. But at its heart is Asa Holmes, a young woman navigating daily existence within the ever-tightening spiral of her own thoughts. And John Green has said, this is his first attempt to write directly about the kind of mental illness that has affected my life since childhood. So while the story is fictional, it is also quite personal. So that will be interesting. And it's got a woman, so that's exciting. And John Green's books are good. So yay, I guess.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, why not? I think
I'm not a massive fan of John Green.
No, I'm kind of indifferent.
I've read a couple of his books.
Yeah,
yeah.
I don't feel super strongly one way or the other, but a lot of people will be over the moon about this. I know.
I would say that there are some books that I adore, and then some that I could leave.
Yeah, I feel kind of similar.
When it comes to John Green, but when he gets it right, it's like they tend to stick with you, those stories. So
yeah, I think. And it's hard, right, also because he had written a bunch of things before The Fault in Our Stars, but, like, nothing that was such a breakout in that same way. So it's, like, kind of not surprising that it's been 5 years because that can be really crippling, I have to imagine, for an author. So it's interesting that he's gone, like, I mean, The Fault in Our Stars was also based on kind of personal experience because it was, like, based on a friendship that he had. But it's interesting that he's gone, like, even more personal for this, it sounds like.
Maybe he's found his niche instead of just like awkward love story. He's realized that he can touch more people with like actual issues.
Yeah, maybe. Mm-hmm. Maybe he no longer writes Manic Pixie Dream Girls while thinking that he's deconstructing the trope, which he is not.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Maybe. Okay.
End of news.
End of news. Let's move on to TV show of the week, where we're going to be telling you about what we've been watching. I'm very excited because I have been watching something for once. It's like an alternate universe over here. I have been super busy with exams, so obviously it was the perfect time to start watching a new TV show. Because that's how life works. So I was very interested to check out Anne with an E on Netflix, which is obviously the new adaptation of Anne of Green Gables, which is a property that we've talked about it on the show before, that I watched it like once ages and ages and ages ago, but I always got it confused with Heidi. I never really had any sort of entrance into it, but we know, many of our listeners are really big fans of it, and I know a couple of people have told us to check out Anne with an E on Netflix, which I found out was like a almost completely female production, like female directors, female writers, female producers. It's really an incredible team, some of who were actually involved with the original series and acting and that and stuff. So So I think, I believe it's an 8-episode series. And have either of you guys watched it, first of all?
I haven't gotten around to this.
Okay. So I had a very interesting experience with it because, as I said, like, I don't remember the first one very well, the adaptation that everyone always talks about. I haven't read the books. I don't know much about it. So I started watching this and I just felt like an asshole because, like, I really, really could not stand the character of Anne. Like, everything about this show is beautiful. The cinematography is gorgeous. The title song is terrible, but the it's beautiful. The acting from everyone is spectacular. The two of course, Anne goes to Green Gables and she lives with the an elderly, like, brother and sister, like, older, not elderly, but and they are just, oh, they're so engaging, and it's just, it's such a beautiful world. The girl who plays Anne, it's so interesting. Like, I struggle to, like, articulate what exactly it is, but it's like she performs. It's like she alone is on a stage and everyone else is in a TV show. So it's like everything is performed for her, but it's not like she's a bad, I think it's a choice. Like, I don't think it's just because the young actress is, like, taken from the stage. I think it's actually because it's part of her very performative nature, and she's very, the series kind of takes her, what I believe in the book is kind of like her exuberism and her, like, her strong emotions, and they make it into something that is, like, legitimately, I think, like, a mental illness. Like, they sort of, she is, I think she has, maybe she has, like, they're insinuating that she has bipolar disorder. She has post-traumatic stress from, like, we see some flashbacks, like, her terrible childhood. She says she has hints of schizophrenia as well. And it's very unsettling. And it's very, like, I feel terrible for, like, saying that she's annoying, but it's it's, like, partly because you're watching a TV show where everything is so stunning and visual and amazing. And then you have this main character who just jumps from one extreme emotion, like, she's exuberantly happy one moment and, like, screaming and shouting the next moment, and it's like it's such a weird feeling. Like, you have to watch it to understand, and, like, I thought that this was what the book was, so I was like, oh well, they did that so well. And then I was reading some reviews afterwards and people were like, what did they do to Anne? Like, why is she so scary? Because she wasn't like this in the book. And basically, I will say that, like, after the first episode, I almost turned it off because they hadn't gotten to the root of her issues yet. So I legitimately thought that, like, she was just over, like, that it was just bad writing. You know what I mean? Like, it was just like they struggled to get her from one emotion to another. But having watched the whole thing, I actually think it's really well done, and it's, like, unsettling in a good way. And I will say, like, I can only recommend this series. And if you start watching it and you're like, oh, I don't know if, like, if I can take it, then I can only say, like, keep watching it, because it gets extremely intriguing. And if you're, like, unsettled by her, then I will say that it's even better, because it's such an interesting take. And I just, like, overall, I've watched it all, and I was very, very blown away by it. And as I said, the rest of the actors are just so fantastic, and the world that they paint there is—it's dark, but it's—I don't think it's as grim as some reviewers have suggested. I think there's a lot of hope in it too. Yeah, so really, really interesting experience, I will say, and a very interesting take on this type of story.
It's interesting that you liked it. I wonder if it's because you're not as familiar with the source material, because all I have seen on my social media feeds is people who are, like, big fans of the book really hating this.
Yeah, they all hate it because they changed it, you know? And I come in with it with fresh eyes, so I'm just like, wow, what an interesting story.
Right.
Comparing it to the original at all. But I have seen some people, because I was reading a bunch of reviews, because I came out of it loving it, and then the first review I found was, like, they ruined Anne of Green Gables. So I went, like, searching for a few more, and I think that that there are definitely mixed reactions, and some of them actually think it's a really, really good updated take on the classic. So yeah, make up your own minds about it, but it's a recommend for me, for sure. And then I also just quickly wanted to say that I'm still catching up with Wynonna Earp, and I'm on season wait, episode 3 of season 2, which was, I think, the season's best yet. Episode 2 wasn't very good, but episode 1 was very good, and episode 3 is good. And literally all this series is missing is women of color, and then it would have everything. And I'm like flummoxed that it doesn't have any, because it has like lots of kick-ass women, lots of LGBT representation. They just included a queer Asian male character, which is something that you don't see a lot. And they have obviously all this amazing, they have this way hot relationship, and they have Winona herself, who is just an awesome character, and they don't have any women of color. And I'm like, why does media keep missing the mark on it, which frustrates me. But it's not like you shouldn't still watch it, because there's a lot of great, it's always hard to like say, well, you should watch it for this reason, but not for this reason. But it's still a really, really, really good show, and I'm really loving the season so far. So yeah, that's it.
Cool. Well, I have also been watching Lady Things this week. I watched Glow, which is the new latest Netflix show, GLOW, standing for Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling. And I meant to just watch the pilot, and then I watched the whole thing. So luckily I had some work I could kind of put this on in the background, although I don't necessarily recommend that you watch it like that. It's really, really good. I loved it. This is the show, it's a semi-fictionalized story about this actual Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling women's professional wrestling sort of competition league TV show that existed in the 80s and in America. And this is a kind of fictionalized account of the women who were involved in that at the beginning and how it sort of got started. It stars Alison Brie. It has a super, super diverse cast. So that is great. And it does some, you know, I don't think it always hits the mark, but it does try and do some interesting commentary on, particularly on race, on different social issues. Basically, you know, the women are sort of this group of outcasts who, for various reasons, have sort of ended up, most of them, you know, are wannabe actresses who can't get work, and they've kind of ended up on this show, which is like half a sport thing, half an acting thing, and a lot of stereotyping. And it plays with that in really interesting ways, like very conscious ways. I was kind of impressed with how it dealt with it, particularly towards the end. But yeah, I really, really like it. It's really fun. It's like super interesting because it's basically just like 12 women interacting with each other in varying degrees of, well, as you can imagine, when there are 12 women together, like, it's complicated. And there's like 3 men in this show, and they just hang around and are kind of in the background, and, you know, that's fine, whatever. And yeah, like, this time period is not my expertise. Like, I'm not an expert in the 80s by any means, so I would be super interested to like read someone go into more of the history of this, because I think it's super fascinating. But yeah, it's only 10 episodes. It's all out on Netflix now. They're like 40-minute episodes, so really easy to get through, and it's so great. I really hate Alison Brie in this, but I think you're meant to. So if you find her off-putting, like, it's definitely worth sticking with it, I would say, because of the other characters, and they get fleshed out a little more once you get past the pilot. So yeah. Have you guys watched it?
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm glad you said that last bit, because I watched the first episode and I could not, and I watched like 5 minutes of the second episode and I had to turn it off because I was so annoyed with Alison Brie. Like,
yeah, she's the worst in this.
I can't take this. Oh my God. Something about this makes me super uncomfortable, because obviously at the beginning they're all like, they hate each other and they're just so mean to each other, and it just stresses me out so much. But I'm guessing it's like, I'm hoping that they're all going to come together as a team, like Pitch Perfect, you know, but with wrestling. So I might keep watching. I don't know. It really stressed me the first couple of episodes. It put me in a bad mood.
Well, maybe actually, you should watch it how I watched it, which was like in the background while doing something else. Because then when she's very annoying, you can be like, okay, I'm not concentrating on this right now. Like, I'm going to do this other thing. But yeah, I think what I liked about this is you don't get to the end and it's all like, we all love each other. Like, there's tension, but there's definitely character growth for most of the characters. It still stars two, you know, conventionally attractive white women. So there's that. But, you know, we'll see. I'm sure the hot takes will be out this week, so we'll all be able to find out what we actually should think about this.
Well, I'm really glad you talked about it, though, because it's been like Netflix is pushing it hardcore, like just on the main page. So I've been curious about it, but not enough to like hit play yet.
I think you'd really like it, Pam.
That's good to know. I've been actually just trying to finish up with the latest season of Orange is the New Black, but I'm almost done. So this might be my next watch through because I'm not ready to finish A Handmaid's Tale yet. So.
Yes.
Yeah.
So many female-led series. I know. I think that's like exclusively what we've been talking about.
Isn't that kind of
like
cool?
So many women. Just the worst.
I know. Yes.
Yeah, incidentally.
Yeah.
Okay, so on that note, let's move on to listener feedback. So we're going to start with Twitter. And Pam and Merima, do you want to do the honors?
Sure. Shelley says, is it just me or does the inner workings of a female mind phrase also annoy you guys? And she sent
scroll down.
So she sent us a screenshot. I think this is from Netflix, I believe. I'm not sure. She sent us a synopsis of Bridget Jones's Diary. And the synopsis reads, this clever tale of Bridget Jones's odyssey from Mr. Right here, right now to Mr. Right delivers a glimpse into the inner workings of the female mind.
Yeah.
Oh, so that's how it works.
Yeah, I guess so. Because we can't even pass the Bechdel test in our own brains, you know?
So
yeah,
true.
Yeah. It's like, how do they think? Do they think? Oh, I guess they do think. Okay.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, that's true. I hadn't even thought about that until you said it.
I agree.
When I read it, I was like, I don't see anything wrong with it. And then you read it out loud, and I was like, oh.
I basically have, like, a general rule, which is, like, anytime a man uses the word female, I'm like, no. And anytime a woman uses the word female, I'm like, yes. So I'm like, Kathleen Anderson says, little Asa Butterfield on Melon is so cute. # binge watching.
Yeah.
Who did he play on Melon, you guys?
It was up to be Alexander Blouse.
I was gonna say too. Actually, I almost
that is a great Mildred. Progression.
I almost tweeted something about that, and I was like, no, I can't because he follows us, and Selena will have my head. So
no, that would have been nice.
Yeah.
I should watch Versailles. Anyway, go on.
Laura says,
I fell behind.
Have finally rewatched the Buffy musical and made the connection of why I have such high expectations for them on other shows. Still very well done. And the 30-minute doc on the DVD was such a fun watch. Selena, you're very familiar, obviously, with the Buffy musical and Buffy in general. Do you feel like that's the standard you hold all musical episodes to?
This is a time when I make my dark confession.
Selena hates it. she hates that episode.
I'm not a huge fan of the Buffy musical, to be honest. Like, I don't know why. I think it's just because I love the show so much, and it broke the form that I was used to. I remember when I watched it when I was younger, I hated it. I was like, you could see that the lines of spoken dialogue were like 80-yard, and the dialogue was very bad because they obviously spent all their time on the songs. And I was like, oh, this is so annoying. It's not the Buffy I love. But having rewatched it later, I obviously really appreciate like how clever the songs are. And I think one of the things that the Buffy musical does so well that like I don't really think any other like TV musical manages is that it's the whole world that's singing, meaning that you get those, like, the mustard song, and you get those people dancing in the background. Like, you get such a rich tapestry of music, where when you have something like the Supergirl musical or, like, the Once Upon a Time musical, it's literally just, it goes from solo song to solo song to duet to solo song to group number, and it's just like, okay, but where's the story in this? And I actually do think, like, on rewatch that the Buffy musical does that better than anyone. So I understand. I wish I shared the inherent love for it, but I have learned to appreciate it later, I guess.
I like the Buffy musical episode. Although I
like Tabula Rasa better, to be honest.
Of course you did.
That's the episode that follows where they all lose their minds.
I think we can all agree that the best musical episode was obviously Grey's Anatomy, where that one girl's in a coma, and then for some reason they sing all the songs that have played on the show before. Like, they're aware of
their own soundtrack.
Oh my god,
I haven't
seen
this one!
Oh, I forgot about
that. Oh, they all sing Chasing Cars. It's these, like, most ridiculous thing. I die.
I'm actually really sad. I can't believe myself. I haven't seen that one. I'm going to watch it.
That was when I quit the show. That was my God. So like season 6 or something. I don't know.
That was it. Yeah. Like none of the deaths, the musical episode.
It was really, really bad. It was also because they were obviously like, okay, these 3 cast members can sing. We'll just give them a lot of songs. And I guess we'll work the plot out around. It's so silly. They literally sing their own soundtrack. Anyway, it made me laugh. Okay. Laura also says, hey ladies, what book are we reading for next for book club? I guess this is more for Patreon, but yeah. We haven't decided.
I think we have a few ideas. Yeah. We'll keep you guys posted. But it's good to know that you guys liked it, because then we'll prioritize that.
Turtles all the way down.
Oh, maybe. Oh, no.
It's not yet.
Actually, that might be. Well, yeah, that's true. But that might be a good idea. That we'll put a little pin on that. Megan says, and this is for all of us, when the Hype Girls take over your summer reading list, you are always spot on with my recs. And she sent us a pile of all of the new books that she's picked up. And it's basically everything we've talked about in the last few episodes, which is so cool. So we have Simon versus the Homo Sapiens Agenda on here, The Upside of Unrequited, Statistical Probability of Love at First Sight, both of the Illuminae books that are out, and a completed little, bound version of Philip Pullman's His Dark Materials. This is, you're gonna have like the best summer ever, Megan.
This is the best book stack.
I love how the books all match.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, they look great, right?
This is so aesthetically pleasing.
It is. I put it on our Instagram. Ooh, Megan's famous now. I was like, this is a much better picture than we usually post. Let's put it on there. Megan also says, guys, I just saw Wonder Woman. I feel empowered. Come at me, bro. I needed this right now. I feel you. Amazing. We have all been there.
Hashtag fight the patriarchy. You can do it. Abby Lee says, in honor of Hypeable Hype's rom-com discussion, tonight definitely calls for chocolate cake and he's just not that into you. These are good choices.
Oh, cute. That's one we didn't mention.
I thought we talked about that one. Oh, in my brain, I probably talked about it. Maribel, what's your favorite rom-com?
I don't know. I have a soft spot for The Holiday.
That's a good one.
Is that an okay choice?
Yeah.
I'm trying to think.
That's a good choice.
Yeah. I like, I really like The Holiday. Mark says, I love Funko. Started with Finn and Poe. My favorite is Ahsoka? Is that how you say that? From Clone Wars / Rebels. Most recent one is 11 from Stranger Things. Guys, I hate Funkos. Why did you make me read this tweet?
I because now I have a soundbite of you saying, I love Funkos.
That is so mean.
It's going to be our opening theme. It's just Marima going, I love Funkos.
I hate you guys.
Oh, my gosh. You were not here. No, we got into this big discussion on Funkos because somebody tweeted us that they bought a Wonder Woman Funko. And I was like, well, of course, because Wonder Woman could get you to buy anything. Like, even you would probably want a Wonder Woman Funko.
Incorrect.
Really?
No. I've made a decision that I do not like Funkos, and I will not back down from this.
not even Diana is going to make you back down.
Not even Diana.
Sticking to it.
Yep.
Jasmine says, what an epic music intro for a very epic podcast. You guys never cease to deliver.
Oh, thank you. I just put that in there because I was like,
I did that.
My efforts.
Are we like announcing that we're switching it up again? Because this is like,
well, I guess we are soon, but we don't have it yet.
And Ning says, me listening to Hype talking about Donald Duck. I need to move to a Scandinavian country. My people live there. Is this because you're like, everyone's depressed and likes Donald Duck?
I'm going to go to the grocery store tomorrow and take a picture of the weekly Donald Duck magazine that comes out.
Amazing. What? You know what's so funny?
This is a thing.
So this, okay, small like side note story. So it's really funny you mentioned that that's why Scandinavia likes Donald Duck, because in the Disneyland parking lot, and my best friend, like, this is why she hates, there's a floor that's like, you can park in the Donald Duck floor. Like, that's just like, you know, like all the floors are like designated by Disney characters. So you can remember where you were. And she hates the Donald Duck floor because every other picture of Donald Duck, like, first he's happy, then he's angry, then she's happy, then he's angry, then he's happy, then he's angry, and she's like, make up your mind, you're like the most bipolar Disney character, and I hate it. just like bothers her so much. But yeah.
Well, we love him. It's not like, it's like Mickey Mouse who's just like helpful and nice all the time. That's
he's the realist, is what you're saying.
Yeah, he is.
We have an email as well from Fernanda who says, "Hello, girls. Three quick thoughts. First, your Wonder Woman hypeable theme song mashup made me smile. It was very cute. Isn't it cool that besides everything else, Wonder Woman was able to bring back the epic superhero theme song? For real, how long has it been since we got out of a superhero movie with a genuinely good, remarkable theme song in our minds? Second, sorry for the Funko talk, Marima, but Selena, I had the same idea as you mentioned last episode about starting a girls-only Funko collection. I've also started with Hermione and Rey and tried to buy only the ones that I find unique looking, because yeah, they all do look the same. Mm. Although that's kind of the point, but people started giving them to me too, and the collection started growing more than I originally intended. Here are my girls," and she sent us this really nice picture of all of her. Super awesome. There's a little Mary Poppins. That's so funny. Oh my gosh. Aww. Anyway, so yeah.
Oh, that's cute. Oh, is there an Agent Carter?
An Agent Carter one. Yeah. Yes.
You get it.
Anyway, that's cool. Great. That Thanks was so fun. Much for the picture. For now. That's awesome.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, totally. I also like want to be a creep and like check out your bookshelf, but I have to read this next email, which came from Ayla, who said, "Just wanted to give a shout out to the release of Imagine Dragons' new album, Evolve. It's a love letter to many different styles and genres with an Imagine Dragons twist, and it'll be on repeat all summer for me. Anyone else a fan? Selena, I know you're a fan."
Well, yeah, I was, like, so excited because I love Imagine Dragons. And I was, like, I saw they had a new album out. I was, like, so excited to finally have some music to talk about on hype. But then I listened to it and I was, like,
oh, no,
I don't like this. So it was very underwhelming. I think there was, like, one or two songs in there that was, like, really good. And then I was just, like, waiting for another good one. And suddenly, like, I don't even know, like, whatever the hell, like, what's his face, like the guy who sings into a volcano started playing or whatever, because like I had run out of songs and I was like, well, okay, I guess that was it. That was all the songs I liked, so.
Sad.
That was a weird story. Anyway. I'm glad you liked it. I'm sad I didn't. Okay, so I guess on that weird note, that wraps up the show. Thank you for listening. We hope that you enjoyed this, our 150th episode of Hype Podcast. Oh my gosh, here's to another 150 episodes. It's going to be fun, guys. You can, as always, if you want, if you have any comments on what we talked about this week, or if you have any suggestions for us, you can do that by emailing hype@hypeable.com. You can tweet us at hypeablehype, and you can leave a comment on hypeable.com, which is hypeable.com. That's like the three ways that are most sort of where we get comments. You can also leave a review on iTunes if you feel so inclined, if you've appreciated us for the past 150 episodes. And that would be such a great help if you gave us a 5-star review and help us move up in the rankings and help us to find more listeners and to kind of expand our community and our little hive mind of entertainment discussion. That would be much appreciated. If you are interested in checking out our Patreon and considering becoming a patron yourself, you can see what we have to offer over on patreon.com/hypepodcast. This week we're releasing, as we talked about at the top of the show, we're releasing our Mulan audio commentary. And because we didn't release a normal episode last week, we will also be releasing for everyone our bonus discussion this week, which is going to be about Harry Potter, because it is, of course, the 20th anniversary of Philosopher's Stone, and there was probably a conspicuous absence of Harry Potter talk on this week's episode of Hype, but that is because that will be the focus of our bonus discussion, and that will be, as I said, available for everyone, whether you are a Patreon or not, over on patreon.com/hypepodcast. And we will also have details of how you can get it on our Twitter, which is @hypeablehype. So check that out. And we hope to hear from you. And we hope you're all having a wonderful week. Thank you for listening. My name is Selena.
My name is Pamela.
And I'm Arma. Bye, guys.
Bye.